Greetings, Trailblazer fans. Long time no here. Casey Holdall here, Trailblazers.com. Got Dave Deckard, BlazersEdge.com on the phone. It's the summer edition of the still unnamed Trailblazers.com podcast. We're going to talk just everything that's gone on this summer, kind of touch on the high points, maybe get to a few of the current events that, at least as current as they are in the NBA during the offseason. But first, some hellos and how are you? So, Dave, how's it going?
I'm doing well. It's good to hear from you again.
You too, Dave. We haven't actually really spoken or done, well, not spoken, but not a lot since probably draft, I would say. So it's good to hear your voice. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, for me too.
I'm fishing for compliments here, so.
That's right. We're going to start doing this pretty regularly again, you think?
I would imagine, yeah. The studio has been pretty mashed up for the past couple weeks. Not that that's the reason why we haven't been doing it. I don't want to blame it on the fine technical folks here. But things are starting to get put back together. That's actually why, or another reason why, Courtside is on hiatus for the next 3 weeks too. So we will fill in where they're dropping off and eventually overtake them, as is our desire and as we are capable of doing. So.
There we go.
Yeah,
well,
there we go.
As long as I'm not your podcasting booty call, I guess that's pretty good. If we start
It's only you, Dave. There's no one else. All right, you're the only one for me. So fear
that's
not.
Good because you know, my mom said if I gave away the milk for free, no one would buy the cow.
So. Yeah, I know it. Yeah, they're not going to make cheese either. So,
okay.
So yeah, no, we're like doves, Dave. You know, we stick together for life. At least I would hope so. This is getting weird already.
There we go.
Man, we're 2 minutes in and it's already getting weird. So let's get to the basketball portion of it. Fairly busy offseason, if not from a personnel front, just from kind of a happening front. Obviously, new general manager, new assistant coaches, new front office staff. So kind of a whirlwind here, and I think we'll probably just kind of touch on the main point. So first draft. Trailblazers come out of the draft with Luke Babbitt, Elliot Williams, and Armon Johnson. All three of those guys signed, so all three will be a part of the Trailblazers next year. Obviously, Babbitt and Elliot Williams were assured that, but Armon Johnson, that was up in the air a bit, and he had recently received a contract not too long ago. So I would say a decent draft for the Trailblazers. You know, I don't know that we saw enough out of Luke Babbitt to at Summer League, at least, to kind of be super gung-ho about the draft. And obviously, having not really got a chance to see Elliot Williams perform yet, a little difficult to gauge him as well. But what I will say, though, is Armon Johnson, I think, at least for me personally, surprised me a little bit in Summer League. I really hadn't seen him a whole lot anyway, so I guess I really didn't know what to expect. But I thought he played pretty well in Summer League, kind of a nice little piece defensively that I think the team added. And overall, I would give the draft a B. You know, nothing that I feel like is going to knock your socks off, but I feel like some good rotation players and a guy like Elliot Williams, who it's possible he could be a impact player down the road, but he's probably going to take some developing first.
It depends on what you're looking for. And from a normal standpoint, I would say you would be semi-disappointed in this draft, at least on the high end. But what the draft allowed the Blazers to do is go ahead and trade away Martell Webster without worrying about losing all their shooting, because they're hoping that Babbitt can fill all of that. It allowed them to reset that contract slot, so to speak, where you can have a reserve small forward who's young, talented, and most importantly, affordable for the next few years, as opposed to Martell, who was already making money that might push him into the luxury tax and was going to need to be re-signed eventually at even more and was not going to come cheap entering his prime. So, I mean, you know, they kind of traded apples for apples there a little bit. Maybe they lost a little bit of production. Certainly they lost a little bit of physical ability and quite a bit of experience Martell had, but they saved money. And really, if you're looking at a reserve small forward behind Nick Batum that you hope is going to play major minutes, that's probably a good move.
Yeah, I think you basically made the I think you basically pretty much laid out exactly why that move was made. You know, I think the team views Nicholas Batum as the guy who's going to be their starting small forward going forward. And, you know, if you have an opportunity to You know, replace a guy making $4 million with a guy that's making $1.5 million, and to get almost, well, I won't say almost the same amount of production, because Martell has proven that he's a rotation player in the league, and Babbitt is, you know, yet to do that. But I think the fact that, you know, you still get some shooting and a guy, or in a guy who is not going to be probably your primary small forward anytime in the near future, it's just a move that kind of makes sense for the Blazers, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you got to remember, they're going to pay at the top end of the roster, and they're going to pay a lot. If you're going to keep, you know, Greg Oden and eventually Nicholas Batum, along with Aldridge and Roy, that's expensive, and you have to think about the financial ramifications as much as we prefer not to as fans, and we want to keep everybody. Also, you have to think Martell isn't going to be happy playing 12 minutes a game and shouldn't be playing 12 minutes a game at his level of talent and experience. And as much as you'd like to have that guy in reserve, it's just not cost effective and it's not chemistry effective to do that. Now, you know, if Nick Batum goes down, then this looks like a disaster. But you can't plan on everybody going down every year, or you might as well just pack it in now.
Yeah, trying to put your team together by forecasting injuries, definitely not the prudent way to go about constructing a team. But I cut you off there too, Dave. I'm sorry about that. Were you going to expand on a point you were making?
No, you were good.
Okay, good.
Because I was just switching to the point guards. I think, in a sense, these young guys might be the same kind of move, perhaps with an eye toward Jared Bayless. Now, I don't think the decision's been made on Bayless yet. I'm not meaning to imply that, nor do I think that it says anything about Bayless's talent, which I think is enormous, or his potential, which is probably also enormous. But if he is not the right fit for this team, guys like Williams and Johnson allow you the possibility of starting over with young athletic guys who bring something to the table without paying, you know, that second contractor.
Yeah, I feel like with Elliot Williams, I feel like that's a straight kind of swing for the fences move for the Blazers. I feel like outside of Bayless or Andre or anyone they have at the roster, I think that taking Elliot Williams was they viewed him as basically the second best athlete in the draft behind John Wall. So I think they saw an opportunity late in the first round to get him, and kind of took it because at that point they feel like it's a talent issue, and you know they felt that he had the raw skills to be a good enough player that you put him on any team, he's gonna do well. So I don't know if that move was made so much with an eye towards kind of figuring out Bayless. Armand Johnson, on the other hand, though, I think you're right on with that, Dave. I think with Armand, they have a guy who they feel like they can plug in at backup point guard eventually, especially as a defensive kind of minded guy who's not gonna make a whole lot of mistakes, who has the athleticism, maybe not the same athleticism that Jared has, but definitely a above average athlete for the point guard position, or any position really, and I feel like they think that if something does have to be done with Jared, that they can feel fairly confident about Armand's ability. Besides the fact that, you know, he was a second round pick and they get him for a real good price, and you know he's really out to kind of prove himself. So I think they did kind of hedge their bets with picking up Johnson on that one.
Yeah, and the sum total of all this is, I mean, you asked the question, did the Blazers get better with this draft? In the immediate future, the answer is no.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't, and that's how this draft differs from, for instance, years past when you acquire talent that was going to make a near immediate impact on your team. Trading Webster away and taking these three players, Webster was going to be able to contribute more minutes and more to the rotation than all three of them combined probably will this year. So the Blazers did not get better. Did the Blazers get a more compact roster, make smarter financial moves, and still give themselves options? Yes, that's exactly what they did, and that's what this draft was about. So from, you know, from a fan standpoint, you know, maybe this is a C+, B- draft. From an internal standpoint, I would imagine that they're fairly happy with what they got because it makes sense from a systemic point of view.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of funny that you put it that way, because you're exactly right in that the team, you know, if you look at it objectively, did not really get better in this draft. When, you know, we're at the point in this team's kind of growth where you, I guess you would want them to get better, because I think it's shown that as currently constructed, or at least, you know, when they get decimated by injuries, that the team is not currently good enough to win a championship. But I guess we're kind of at that limbo point where, you know, you're not getting a good enough draft pick to drastically improve your team, but you're also getting, you know, but maybe you don't need that improvement because you already have the guys on your roster who are going to be able to get it done, and you don't need necessarily to add a whole lot of new pieces to it. But definitely, you know, I would agree with that, Dave. I'm going to revise my grade from B to B minus C plus because, yeah, for one thing, a lot of it's incomplete, and for another thing, yeah, you had to get rid of a nice piece of Martell Webster to move forward.
Yeah, and I think the Blazers signaled a little bit, at least, that they do believe in the core of this team, at least. Because I would suspect that there were moves, in fact, we saw some moves made on draft night, that could have improved this team, could have brought in veteran help, immediate help. They ended up not making those. And, you know, that's fine. Part of it might have been opportunity. But I think part of it really is saying we need to give these guys another year. Maybe we add around the edges, and certainly if a fantastic move like a Chris Paul is out there, you pull the trigger. But in the absence of that, we're good, and we're ready to fill around the edges here.
Yeah, and the guy who will be doing that filling, Rich Cho, who obviously took over for Kevin Pritchard after his ouster, I guess you would call it. Well, I wonder too what Rich thought of that draft, and if it would have been any different if Rich would have been making the moves. I think, you know, that kind of gets into an area where you kind of question how or who is making those decisions, and I don't even know if I want to get into that conversation. But interesting to see kind of where he's going to take this team so far. We don't really know a whole lot about what Rich Cho has done yet, because, you know, we haven't really seen any moves yet. And I know I've kind of read around a little bit. Some people may be complaining a little bit about that, which I find kind of strange, but I try not to question our fans too much. But still kind of not sure exactly what direction Rich Cho is going to take this team in just yet. But, you know, if the rumors are true about Rudy Fernandez and his wanting, or I guess it's really not even rumors anymore. They basically said he doesn't want to be here anymore. Kind of his first challenge. I think that'll be maybe the first chance we get to see exactly kind of what kind of executive Rich Cho is here in Portland.
Yeah, there were about 12 possibilities in that question. Yeah. I'm not sure. Cho making the draft, I'm comfortable kind of with him not, in a sense, because this was the kind of draft that I think you had to have restraint in order to make. And I think it's awfully difficult your first time at the helm to have that restraint. You want to make an impact right away. And frankly, had Rich Cho done this draft, people might be jumping down his throat right there. People, sure, you know, might be much more critical of, for instance, you know, Luke Babbitt's performance in Summer League or whatever than they were as it was. So I think that's all right that he didn't make it. I will be curious next year to see what happens. Cho seems to me like type who is, I don't want to say exactly a delegator, but someone who certainly relies on his network. And he has to be, I think, from not coming from a pure background. So, you know, I'll be interested to see how the new scouting staff performs with the old parts and the new parts meshing in. And as far as not making a move, I think people need to chill out because every other GM in the league is on vacation. So, I mean, how many moves have been made since Summer League? Zero, right?
Zero, yeah. I mean, can't really think of any off the top of my head. So yeah.
Takes two to tango, and your tango partner is off on the beach somewhere. You'll see things pick up as training camp approaches. So you got to hold off on the heat isn't trading fast enough talk because, you know, it's not the time for it yet. It'll be interesting to see, as you say, what he does with Rudy. But to me, that's more of a minor thing, I suppose. I don't think a lot of stuff is going to happen in that Fernandez trade as far as acquiring talent. I think they'll be able to move him. We'll have to see. But I think Cho's real report card will come, you know, a year or two from now when we look back and we say, did this roster tighten up? Did they have to dump so much salary that it took a championship chance? And just basically, how are we doing in 2 years? Are we contending deep? If we're not, maybe that's not entirely Cho's fault, but there's a problem. This is put up or shut up time, and this has to be the guy that gets it right.
Yeah, and I kind of question is, can we even wait 2 years? You know, like it seems like maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like there's this kind of notion out there, like it's got to happen now, you know, like there, I don't know if 2 years is, I think 2 years would be fair, but I don't know if 2 years is going to be what other people think is fair, you know, and I'm not trying to imply that, you know, he's got 1 year to get it done, because I don't think that's true at all, but it just seems like there's kind of this notion out there, it's like, well, we got to do something now, and people are sick of waiting, so, you know, I would hope that, well, in fact, I'm not even worried about Rich kind of making moves feeling like something has to be done, but I think there probably is a little more pressure on Rich Cho to get this team performing than maybe there was on Kevin Pritchard, just because you know, with Kevin, the team was still coming along, and he had brought it from kind of its low point, along with other people, of course, but he had kind of fostered that move, and so I feel like he had a little bit of maybe a, I don't know, a little money in the bank, though obviously didn't save his job. But with Rich, though, I feel like, you know, the team is already at a point where people are expecting it to win. And, you know, any kind of backtracking at this point, I can't imagine people are going to – that's not going to sit well with people, I guess.
Yeah, and that will be the interesting point. And that's part of it. Besides the player development, that this is part of why I say 2 years is probably a fairer window. Because, number one, Cho's playing with someone else's roster right now. He's playing with someone else's coach right now. He's just learning the organization right now. And he's just making his connections in the league right now. Obviously, he has some as an assistant in, you know, Oklahoma City. But, you know, that's different than being a GM and having to make those moves and having that authority. So you got to give him a year to break in. You got to ask, okay, what's going to happen if the Blazers don't advance next year? Are there changes to be made on the roster? Are there changes to be made in the coaching ranks? Those are going to be really delicate and intricate and, in some ways, controversial decisions. How is he going to handle that storm if it happens? So either way you look at it, if things go well, probably it's going to take 2 years for the Blazers to really reach their peak, or at least see their peak, you know, from on the journey. And if you say that things don't work out, then there's going to be some real tough decisions to be made this summer. Either way, that's probably a 2-year window.
Yeah, I would hope it's at least a 2-year window. But man, like I said, reading some of the message boards and some of the comments in blog, people want a winner, and that's you know, that's understandable, and to a certain extent, you know, I think that, you know, some of those concerns might be shared with the ownership group as well, because I mean, you know, they want to see a winner here sooner rather than later. So,
right. But, well, they've got a winner. I mean,
true enough.
To tease at. I mean, and this is the thing is that it's how soon do we forget? Already, people have forgotten what it's like for half the roster to be out, and that happened, you know, last year. People have forgotten that it's miraculous that the Blazers got as far as they did. Already starting to hear complaints about not winning Phoenix series, forgetting that Brandon Roy was hobbled or out for almost all that series and nearly completely ineffective, that Andre Miller and Marcus Camby were shut down for much of that series, that Greg Oden was out, that Joel Frisbilla was out. I mean, my goodness, what do you expect? I mean, the Suns were playing hot. They advanced in the playoffs. And that win just wasn't going to happen because, if nothing else, because of all the contingencies surrounding Portland's roster. But, you know, 2 months go by and people forget that, and it's like, well, we should have won. Last year was basically a devastating, impossible situation. And it's as if a year in the life this roster and its growth got erased. So whatever the expectations were at the beginning of last year are pretty much also the expectations at the beginning of this year, because that year didn't exist. And last year's expectations were get out of the first round. That's what this year's expectations are.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I should backtrack here for a second. Didn't talk about the signing of Wesley Matthews, not Wesley Johnson, which I called him to his face the first time I met him, which was pretty rad. I think that's a pretty good move for Portland. I think there are people who admit that, you know, they probably paid a little more than you would maybe in a regular year. Obviously, this off-season free agency period was probably the strangest and, you know, most money spending of any in some time. But Wesley Matthews, a nice little piece, probably coming off the bench. But yeah, I think that's, you know, I think he's probably got an opportunity to start if for some reason Brandon Roy switches over to point guard, or if Wesley's playing small forward, I guess. Well, he's not going to start there either. So I don't know. I think it's a pretty decent pickup for Portland. Again, not a move that that's going to really knock your socks off. He does kind of fill in that role that Martell Webster evacuated, I guess, or was traded from. So, you know, kind of a, I think a, maybe a little bit of a lateral move. Maybe, you know, since he is only a second-year player, you're expecting his growth to continue, and maybe, you know, you get a player who's substantially better than he is now. But I would say right now, you know, a solid move, but not, again, one of those moves that's going to, you know, maybe get you to that next level.
Yeah, well, here's where you see the fallout more from the draft, too. You draft a Babbitt so that you can move a Webster so that then you can afford and have roster space for Wesley Matthews. The big thing about Matthews is that he can play shooting guard, which I don't think Martell ever really was comfortable doing.
No.
And so instead of having a reserve small forward who needed a bunch of minutes and could only play small forward, and though he was good defensively, always was kind of seen more as an offensive player, or at least if he didn't have a good offensive game, you wondered whether he succeeded, really. Now you have a more targeted defensive player who's a reserve, who will be, if not happy, at least able to play fewer minutes, and who plays at the shooting guard position where basically you had nothing. So, you know, it's a good percentage move. You know, again, I'm not sure, like you said, that it makes the team all that much more talented, but it makes the roster make a little more sense.
Yeah, and I think that was probably what they were going for, and that was also kind of in that interim time, too, where, you know, Kevin was gone, but Rich wasn't yet hired, and, you know, I think it's a move that makes sense for Portland, but, you know, nothing that's, you know, crazy or anything. And, you know, there are people who say, you know, that they overpaid, but I think that when you kind of look at the situation for what it is, you know, they used the mid-level on him. I mean, you're not going to be able to probably split that mid-level up and get two guys who are going to be, you know, better than the one guy you get in Wesley Matthews. So I think from that perspective, fiscally, it's not a bad move for Portland.
If he's the guy you want, time will tell on that decision. You have to judge these things down the road, and it's possible they really screwed up, but we don't know that. If he turns out to be just the guy that you need, I mean, we've been talking at Blazers Edge about some of the reserves of the past that people admire or remember, and some of those made an important difference to their respective squads. If Wesley Matthews turns out to be that kind of guy who is like a little unsung hero in the bigger chorus of the championship run, hey, he is worth that money, and no doubt about it, you pay it twice if you have to. But the Blazers have basically signaled he was our guy, at least this year, and we were willing to do whatever it took to get him. So we'll see. He needs to perform now like he's the man.
Yeah, I think for me, my worry is that, you know, this signing turns out to be what the Trenton Hassel signing would have been if it would have actually gone through. I think that Wesley being younger and probably, you know, and having spent a year in the Jazz system, I think probably really helps him as well. But you kind of hope that, you know, this isn't one of those decisions where you kind of bought high instead of bought low. So time will tell. I know that some people, Kevin Pelton in particular, I've read, who's a person I really respect, I think was kind of suspect on the decision. And, you know, and like I said, I take Kevin's opinion pretty seriously. So, but I also take the opinion of our scouts more seriously. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed, folks. I guess that's what I would say. And if nothing else, I feel like with Wesley, you have a serviceable player if he's not ever, you know, that second tier fantastic player, I guess.
Yeah, you're never going to be sad to have him on the roster. The part that might make you cry is if that salary ended up as an albatross as far as the luxury tax line went, and you had to lose somebody else because you didn't want to pay the tax because you had to keep Matthews.
Absolutely. Do we need to talk about Summer League, Dave? What do you think? Summer League, I'll recap it here real quick. Blazers, you know, lost one game. You know, no one, I would say, looked particularly fantastic. We saw Patty kind of do what Patty does, which is penetrate, make some mistakes, but, you know, put pressure on a defense. We saw Luke Babbitt kind of, you know, looked a little shaky, as you know, you might expect. Had a nice game towards the end there. Dante and Jeff, neither of those guys really setting the world on fire. I will say, I mean, Jeff did finish the Summer League third in rebounding, which, you know, it's nothing to sneeze at, but nothing, I would say, too awful exciting from them. And Armon, I would say, probably the guy who had the best Summer League of anyone on Portland's roster. Got a gang of steals, as you can do in Summer League with guys turning the ball over left and right. Showed that, you know, he can get to the rim and showed a little bit of a stroke. That's Summer League, as far as I'm concerned. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, pretty much. I was impressed by Johnson. His ability to use his body in particular and his defensive instincts. I mean, yes, you're playing against kind of subpar ball handlers sometimes, but, you know, some of those guards are no slouches in Summer League, and he handles quite a few of them. So I'm excited about his potential. I would have loved to have seen Williams, of course. You know, Dante didn't surprise me, didn't dominate, but did a lot of things well. And I think the thing that I liked about his game was that he showed more understanding of the game, for instance, than we saw last year on the defensive end and in the in-between part in particular. So it looked like he had thought about his game and worked on it. So that's excellent. Pendergraph, not too bad, but really didn't show any signs of overcoming the things that would have kept him on the bench last year, which was fouling and defensive positioning, that kind of thing. So, you know, he did okay. Hasn't done anything that changes my mind on him, really. I like him, but he needs to control his game a little bit more and find out how to contribute efficiently. So, yeah. And Babbitt, well, I mean, Babbitt is raw. in certain areas, and I don't expect too much from him in the immediate future, but I don't think the Blazers expect too much from him in the immediate future either in terms of coming in and playing 20 minutes a game. I think the guy will get a few minutes to show what he can do. He just needs to work on his game a whole lot. I think his best shot is working on the non-offensive parts of his game, becoming an energy player, using his size a little bit and his willingness to bang, not just on the offensive end, but also on the defensive end. And if he can develop a little bit of energy game, then he can probably see the floor more immediately. Otherwise, he's just going to have to wait till he gets comfortable and used to the league, and that may take a while. The thing that made me wonder about him was he did like the contact so much, which is nice, but the contact he's going to get in the NBA, especially if he's dribbling in and trying to go inside a little bit in that short mid-range game, is going to be with like 6'9" dudes who weigh a ton, and they're going to hit him like a brick. I don't know if his shot's going to go in quite as much after he's absorbed that contact as the contact he got in summer league or college.
Yeah, for Luke, basically, every time you talk to Dick McMillan during Summer League about what he thought about Luke's bad performance, he said, every time, you know, he's going to need to get better defensively. So, I mean, that's really, I would hope that that's his focus, because that's, I mean, with Nate around, that's the only way you get on the court is if, you know, especially in that second unit, is if you can come in and, you know, play sufficient defense, because, I mean, you go out there and get burned a couple times, and you're not going to get a chance to show whether or not you can take the ball to the hoop or whether or not you can shoot the three because you're going to be on the bench. So, yeah, you know, I would agree that, you know, it was interesting to see him put the ball on the floor. And just for me, it was, you know, I hadn't watched a whole lot of Wolfpack games myself, so I didn't really know a whole lot of what we were getting in Luke. And yeah, I was surprised a bit by his ability to put the ball on the floor. I was surprised a bit at how, I don't want to say poorly, but he didn't shoot as well as I thought he would. You know, that's something that I think, you know, I think it'd probably be attributed to nerves maybe, but not the dead-eye shooter, at least at Summer League, that I was hoping to see. But, you know, obviously those aren't always the best opportunities to show that. But I think, yeah, for me, really, though, Dave, my biggest complaint about Summer League is that there was no Dave Deckard there this year. So,
oh, well.
That was my big beef.
Vegas couldn't handle me.
Yeah, that's true.
They kicked me out last time and told me not to come back. I was too wild for them, I guess. The thing about Babbitt, though, that maybe made me question the most is, other than certain times he was on the dribble, his attack looked pretty slow. His release looked a little slow. His ability to get the ball from holding it down to the floor and get that first step initiated looked a little slow. Being deliberate is not a good thing for a non-spot-up shooter in the NBA. Unless you're going to be that weak-side catch-and-shoot guy, you've got to be able to move and release and make decisions quickly. Now, some of that will come with experience, obviously, but I wonder if just the physical reactions are there to allow him to shoot comfortably and to prosecute his offense, because those defenders are going to close on him so quickly and that court becomes very small, and that's not going to help his nerves or confidence either.
Yeah, definitely some time in an NBA weight room with an NBA nutritionist probably would do all those rookies a bit of good. I know that I talked to both Armon and Elliot a couple days ago, and they were both, you know, spending quite a bit of time in both the gym and in the weight room. I haven't seen Luke yet, but I'm sure he's probably working out back home. So, you know, it's good that those guys are going to have some time to adjust, because, like you've mentioned numerous times, there's not going to be a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of room for probably any of those guys in the rotation this year. But, you know, at least a good opportunity for them to learn the ropes and kind of figure out what the NBA game is about, and for the team to see them in NBA setting and to kind of get a better grasp of who they are as players. So we'll see how that develops. Kind of moving on to more current events here. Rudy Fernandez, we mentioned a little bit, obviously through his agent, declared his desire to not be in Portland next year, saying that he will sit out if he has to. Which, you know, who knows if that's actually the case or not. Reports today, or I would say, yeah, what's the diplomatic way to put this? The, you know, very loose reports today that the Celtics are at least semi-interested in acquiring Rudy. Not sure really what to make of that yet. What would you make of this whole Rudy situation, Dave? I know you had mentioned that, you know, I think during the offseason things kind of get blown out of proportion. And to hear you say, you know, that it's kind of a minor thing, I think it's interesting and, you know, probably pretty true.
Yeah, I think it's a minor thing as far as the eventual future of this team. It's obviously a somewhat major issue now as far as chemistry and personnel. Problem with Rudy is he doesn't have any clout and getting his desires. If he sits out, it's going to cost him not only his salary, but, I mean, where else is he making money, and is he still spending money paying off his buyout that he had to agree to in order to come over here? Also, he starts to look like a little bit of a, what would you say, chemistry problem? Mm-hmm. How many guys in the NBA hold out? I mean, I know it happens in football, but that's very rare in this league. I'm hard-pressed to think of anybody who's just kind of sat out their contract. So, you know, how much interest is there really going to be? There was opportunity here for Rudy. I think there still is opportunity here for Rudy, although the signing of Wesley Matthews obviously cuts down on that. But, you know, you always have a chance as a shooter, which Rudy definitely is. I mean, his rookie year, he was fantastic from the three-point line. So, I mean, the answer for Rudy is the same as it's always been. We know you're upset. We know you feel jilted and ripped off maybe even a little bit. But you've got to show that you can get on the court, and you've got to go in and take those minutes if you want them. They're just not going to be given to you. Maybe your road has been steeper than anyone else's, but that's the road in front of you, and you've got to conquer it. Look at this point like Rudy's willing to do that, and if he's not willing to do that, I think the Portland probably doesn't really want him on their team. Now, the flip side of this is what can they get for him? I don't think they're going to give him away. There's no incentive for them to give him away. They'd rather have him, I think, sit out than take an asset that they don't want. So, I mean, it's a no-lose situation for the team, unfortunately for Rudy, because they have the personnel to cover for him now, and he has no leverage to force a trade. So I think either way it goes, I think they prefer to have him, they'd prefer to trade him, top on the list probably at this point. B, they'd prefer him to play, but if it's option C, he sits out, oh well, the team goes on.
Yeah, I would really hope that wouldn't happen, but, I mean, you're exactly right. The team has... is in no hurry to trade him, I don't think, and they've expended resources to acquire Rudy. So, you know, from a management perspective, you know, you probably need to get something to show out of that. I mean, they laid out money to get him in the first place. I'm sure they kicked in the maximum amount they probably could for his buyout. So, I mean, there's cost that that has been acquired by the Trailblazers for acquiring Rudy. So. You know, hopefully something can get figured out. I would, you know, as far as this whole Boston thing goes, if Rudy's not happy in Portland, I can't imagine that Boston would be a whole lot better situation for him. But I mean, I guess that would be whatever team's problem if that were to be the case. But you know, I kind of through reading all this stuff, got the feeling that maybe that Rudy was really more interested in going back to Europe, which, you know, I can understand that. You know, I know that people are kind of down on Rudy, and I think that's, you know, that's okay. But I mean, from my perspective, I look at it more of a, you know, not an athlete franchise perspective, more of a human perspective. And I mean, there's no job that's worth being unhappy about, you know? So, I mean, from one standpoint, I can kind of, you know, I can sympathize with Rudy, because like I said, I don't think that people should be unhappy just for the sake of their jobs. But on the other hand, you know, you did sign on to something, and you know, I think most people would say that you should probably see it through, and you know, there's definitely a way to conduct yourself. But you know, I guess just in general, I'm a little not as maybe hardline as a lot of people are about Rudy. I think that, you know, it has been a bit of a tough go for him, and you know, I hope things mm-hmm. work out for him. I don't know.
Yeah, there are two things there. I mean, you have to empathize with Rudy. You look at it from his perspective. He's a budding star in Europe. He's going to have the world at his feet. From his perspective, he gives that up to come to the NBA to prove himself against the best players, can't get enough playing time, isn't making any money. And, you know, that feels like you traded a great opportunity for a lousy one. Then again, we all have to do that in life, especially when we're in our 20s. We all make decisions about whether to go here or there. I've had opportunities because of Blazers Edge that I could have taken to pursue certain dreams. Ultimately, I ended up not doing that. That's the kind of thing you have to decide in life, and you never know which one is going to be the right decision. And if you end up making the wrong one, especially when you're so young, you take the loss for it, and you restart in a couple years. But you can see how that's really disappointing to Rudy, and how the situation is not good for him. So, I mean, and the other thing is, there's a thing, a trend among fans, where if you get kind of upset with a guy, you tend to disparage everything about him. This guy's still got game. This guy's still got skills. I think this guy can still play in the NBA. In fact, this guy could play for a lot of teams in the NBA who don't have the specific requirements, for instance, the Blazers, maybe even the Celtics might have. So this guy could belong in this league, and he's not a bad player, and I don't think he's entirely a bad guy. He's just in a bad situation and maybe not handling it so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very similar to, you know, the Juan Carlos Navarro situation a couple years back. I mean, that's a guy with NBA talent, and, you know, he could be playing in the NBA if he wanted to, but, you know, he decided he'd be more happy playing in Spain. He's doing great over there, and, you know, I don't think anyone should fault him for it. You know, it's I don't know that he demanded trades or ever claimed he was going to sit out a season, but I mean, kind of similar situations. It's not like this is the first time something like this has happened before, so right. I would just ask people, just mellow out, you know, like let the process play out, and you know, things will happen for the best eventually, hopefully.
Right. Rudy should take the first opportunity he can to get out of town if he wants to. The thing is, Rudy can't force his way out of town without negative consequences.
Absolutely. Getting on to another guard whose future in Portland is still somewhat in question, Patty Mills. I'm looking at sternwarning.com here, saying that there's whispers, quote-unquote, that Patty Mills is in negotiations with the Trail Blazers to secure another contract. That would be, I don't want to say surprising, but that would be an interesting move, I think, for the Blazers. Obviously, there's already 15 guys secured on the roster right now, so someone would have to go before then and a contract. But I think Patty's a guy. I was talking about this yesterday with some people in my department, and I think, you know, Patty's another guy who has NBA talent. Maybe made the jump from college just a bit too soon, but a guy who has talent, who I think can help a team, maybe not the Trailblazers right away in probably a third guard position, but you know, a guy who's got some talent, who, again, who the Trailblazers expended some resources on, and a guy who I'm sure they probably don't want to have to just cut just because.
Yeah, he's got good offensive skills, I think. He's got good confidence. Translating both of those into an NBA environment hasn't quite happened yet, but the guy needs some, you know, minutes and some experience to do it. Can he get those minutes on this team? And look at the point guard roster if you sign him. You've got Miller, you've got Bayless, who with the Matthews signing almost certainly is exclusively a point guard now, although he basically was before as well. You got Johnson and you got Williams, who, you know, definitely can't man playing time at this point or expect it, but are still point guards on the roster. Then you got Mills. That's one-third of your roster tied up in the point guard position. That doesn't seem real feasible to me.
No, it doesn't to me either. But, I mean, yeah, I guess when you're getting to you know, your 14th and 15th man, I guess maybe the decisions become less about roster balance and more just about, hey, who's the better guy on the team or that we have near the team right now. So, yeah, I don't know.
I suppose, but then you're carrying people who are never going to see the light of day, which I guess happens to 14th and 15th men all the time, but how do you even practice?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You make up your entire team of point guards. So,
yeah,
I guess
they break off into their own separate group while everyone else works out and
exactly.
I guess I played games of one-on-one or against each other. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's one way to address the situation. You're not quite sure about point guards, so you get five of them and see which one sticks.
Absolutely. Another, obviously, a bigger piece of the Trailblazers puzzle right now, Greg Oden. Greg Oden's been working out, I think, back and forth between here and Indiana. Ben had a nice interview with him a couple days ago at his mentor event. Kind of, this is really the make or break season for Greg, it would seem like. Reports are that he has dropped some weight, that, you know, but as we saw last week with stories by, well, it was in Ben's interview, and Joe Freeman had a story about Oden and his timeline and how, you know, the team isn't putting any kind of expectation. Well, I don't want to say they're not putting expectations on him, because they are, but they're not putting any definite timelines on when he should be back. Which for me, I mean, I kind of look at that situation, and for me, the team doesn't really have anything to gain by saying, you know, Greg's going to be back on this day. You know, they have something to lose by saying that, but they don't have anything to gain. So from the team's perspective, it makes perfect sense to me. I know that, you know, fans and the media alike would like maybe a little more information about where he's in his healing process. But to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to put out definite timelines that you may have to end up breaking, and then people wonder why you're breaking timelines and so on and so forth. But Greg, obviously a big part of this team. I'm not entirely sure. I think he may be up for an extension here sometime soon. I don't really want to get into that because I don't know the exact particulars, but kind of a low-key summer for Greg, I would say. Haven't seen him around a whole lot, which is probably a good thing. You know, but camp is coming up here soon, so hopefully he will be ready to go by then, but I don't think anyone really knows at this point.
Right, you're dead on as far as the public presentation of Odin. The team has nothing to lose with any kind of comment, or nothing to gain, rather, with any kind of comment. If they say something positive, people will roll their eyes and say, we've heard this before, we got to see it on the court. If they say something that people perceive as negative, then it's, oh, this happened to Odin again, and he's not, you know, performing to expectations or whatever. So I can understand that the best publicity move at this point is just to keep your mouth shut. And the team has been doing pretty good about that, I think. You know, I'm fine with that. As far as Odin himself, I mean, it's nebulous. It's iffy. We don't know. And it's hard to tell from him. And the difficult thing with Greg is that he himself is kind of noncommittal in his expression of most things. I remember talking to him and interviewing him a little bit when after he first got drafted, that first summer league. I mean, the guy was literally at the peak of his fame, of his career to that point, just been the number one pick. The spotlight was on him, been a huge rally at the, you know, the courthouse square and all of that. Everything was going for him. You know, he kind of shrugged his shoulders and smiled and, you know, was okay with it. Now he's at possibly the lowest point of his career, at least, you know, other than the days he was injured. You know, the expectations have never been lower. The worries have never been higher. Everybody nationally has kind of forgotten him or given up on him. He kind of shrugs his shoulders and smiles and says, okay. So, I mean, there's no difference. So how do you get a read? It's very difficult. And I think for Blazer fans and everybody, it's the same process, maybe even for Greg himself, which is just watching to see what happens. And you hope the guy is working as hard as he can to A, make a comeback, to be a player of significance in this league, to be that all-star player, or at least be a player who's a real solid contributor and a defensive dominator for years to come. You have to trust he's putting in that work. If he's not putting in that work and doing that, then we're all in trouble, including him. But the only way you will know is his performance on the court.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I know that there's always increased interest in a guy like Greg because he's the number one pick, and you know, just kind of his story of kind of the hardships he's endured throughout his pro career. But yeah, I mean, the only thing that matters is how he plays. And yeah, you're going to be able to tell if he's been working out, if he's been working on his game, if he's lost weight when he plays. You know, anything before that is really kind of, you know, ancillary at best. I think that, you know, until we can see it, then yeah, you know, no one's going to believe it, and I don't know that necessarily they should, and which is why, you know, when people are always asking, you know, what's Greg Oden doing, I'm always like, well, I mean, does it matter, you know? Like, if he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, we'll know it, and just the opposite is true. If he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing, it'll be pretty dang obvious when the time comes. So you know, I think really with Greg, it's all wait and see at this point. From all points, from health to his game to, you know, what his mindset is, all that stuff is, you know, it's all wait and see.
Yeah, and we, you know, we started this with the draft, saying, well, this is kind of a non-factor draft in terms of on-court performance in the short-term future. This is the factor thing. I mean, it still rides with Odin. Team will rise and fall based on his performance more than it will rise and fall based on any other single factor on the roster or in the organization. This is still it, for better or worse, for the team and for their performance. So we will just have to see. hope he's ready for training camp. I hope he's ready for opening day. If not, that's why you have Marcus Camby, and you make do with him for, you know, a month if you need to or whatever. You know, if it starts getting into the turn of the year and into spring and Odin's not back, you start really, really worrying. But I assume at this point that he is a go, that he is going to play. And if not, you know, as a starter on opening night, at least very soon thereafter.
Yeah, from a guy who has, the reports are that he's lost weight, to a guy who's reportedly bulking up, LaMarcus Aldridge. Reports are that he's added, I think, Dave, you had mentioned 20 pounds of muscle, which his frame definitely has the capability to put on 20 pounds. I think that'd probably be a good thing for the Trailblazers in general. Everyone's always complaining that LaMarcus doesn't spend enough time in the post. And, you know, having an extra 20 pounds of bulk definitely helps you, or at least maybe gives you some confidence to be able to kind of set that position in the post and stay down there. I'm not as concerned about that as other people are, I guess, but, you know, anytime you hear about a guy adding muscle, you know, it's great. But I should also say, too, you know, every single team in the league right now, there's probably a guy who there's been reported that he's put on 20 pounds of muscle. So it's always kind of, you know, once again, until I see it, you know, I don't necessarily exactly believe it. Not that I'm saying that anyone is fibbing about it, but, you know, it's kind of one of always those stories where it's like, oh yeah, so-and-so is bigger or so-and-so slimmed down, which is supposedly the case with Brandon Roy. Don't really know that with Brandon it's as big of a deal, but I think with LaMarcus it is a situation where if he did put on some muscle and some size, you know, maybe even just from a mental perspective, that would be helpful to him.
Yeah, and perhaps from a defensive and rebounding perspective as well. He needs to be able to bang a little bit more on that end. I'm comfortable with him not being a low post player on the other end unless Greg is out, in which case we need him to be the low post player on that end because, you know, Marcus Camby isn't really, and the number of players who can do that are pretty small. So, on this roster anyway. So, you know, that would help from that perspective. I assume he's still going to be mostly a face-up jump shooter. And as long as he hits his shots, that's all right. But I would like to see a few more rebounds. I would like to see a little more versatility on defense, especially being able to, you know, guard the post if need be. So, you know, muscle will help. And, you know, the thing about muscle, too, is that unlike fat, it's relatively easy to take off if it's not working out. So we may find him losing some of that or you know, maintaining during the season as needed.
I actually have a problem keeping muscle off myself, so I guess my situation is probably different than other people. I guess for me, too, what's more important to me, more than 20 pounds of muscle or 10 pounds of muscle or 5 inches of height, is that, you know, that LaMarcus went out and got himself a personal trainer this year in the off season, which, you know, he did that by himself. He had never done that before. I think before, you know, he had relied on, you know, maybe working out with other people and the team sending someone down to work out with him, which is what's happened the past couple of years. But the fact that he's taken that initiative on himself, and that, you know, obviously he's not satisfied with where he is as a player right now. You know, and I feel like there's kind of this notion out there that maybe LaMarcus doesn't care as much as people would wish he does, and I don't really know where that's come from. But I think more than anything, just the fact that he's obviously, you know, accepted the fact that he needs to get better in certain areas, and he's willing to go out and do those things himself. I think that says, you know, a lot about where his mind is right now and his desire to keep improving and to not be satisfied now that he's got kind of his first big contract.
Right. I mean, LaMarcus had a decent season last year.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say that, wasn't a great season by any stretch, but I mean, I think it was decent.
Well, that's the thing, exactly. He had a decent season, but he had the potential to have a star breakout season, and that didn't happen. So it's a matter of how does he see himself? And my impression early on was he always saw himself as a star on this team, as at least co-equal with Brandon Roy, if not having a chance to exceed him. That hasn't happened. And it could have happened you know, I don't know about exceeded. Well, yeah, he could have exceeded Roy last year because Roy, you know, had the injuries and was in and out and didn't have his best year either. LaMarcus could have been the man on this team, and it didn't work out that way. Maybe he saw that and, you know, reassessed. Have I lost my way? Have I lost my drive a little bit? Have I become too complacent and content with just playing this game instead of dominating it? So, I mean, if that's so, more power to him, and I'd love to see him come out and take the bull by the horns, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, too, as far as being the man, especially in that playoff series against Phoenix. You know, I mean, that was really his opportunity to kind of prove that, you know, he could carry this team as well, and probably didn't turn out as well as anyone would have liked to. So and having that as your last memory of the season as well, probably hopefully it's fueling that fire for LaMarcus to get better. Well, I think I pretty much got to everything I wanted to get to, Dave. Are we missing anything?
I think we've covered almost the whole off season between then and now, so I think we're current in one podcast.
Fantastic. Well, next week, which I intend on doing it next week, Dave, I hope you do as well. You know, we might not have as much to talk about. Maybe it'll be a little shorter, but I say we just keep on keeping on.
Yep. I think these certain segments of the population appreciate it. So not much else going on media-wise during the dog days here. So we will fill in and be all of your booty calls, I suppose, until your normal hookups come back.
That man, no one puts together an analogy on the fly like Dave Deckard. I will tell you that much right now. What you guys got going over there, Dave? BlazersEdge.com.
Still doing the scrub down every day, working on a mailbag, you know, just various odds and ends of off-season stuff. So we'll have to see. Sometimes I never quite know what's going to come out of the hopper in the off season until it strikes me at 7 o'clock in the evening that we haven't talked about this. So exciting times at Blazers Edge. You never know what you're going to find.
Absolutely. And also at trailblazers.com, we'll have a little Q&A with Armand Johnson today. Obviously, we have this podcast up there, as will Dave. We're going to be following the FIBA World Championships fairly closely since we have quite a few irons in that fire. So we'll be following up on that. I think that's about it for us. Some of the guys are starting to filter back into town, so trying to get down to the PF every now and then and watch a few workouts, see how things are going, and grab a few guys. So hopefully we'll have some more updates from a few more of the players. I already told Brandon that I wasn't going to bother him until training camp, though, so I probably will not be delivering any kind of updates on Brandon, at least from a one-on-one perspective. But that's what we got going on Blazers.com. So,
well, it's not that far away, you know.
No, it's not. But and when I said training camp too, he was like, "Only till training camp?" I was like,
"Yeah,
well, yeah." You know, you're the face, man. I gotta knock on your door and make sure that people know what's going on, or else, you know, my bosses are asking me why I'm not talking to you. So,
exactly.
So if you're listening to this, Brandon, it's all love, but I gotta bother you. I can't help it.
And if you count my podcast, it's only like 4 podcasts left till training camp opens.
That's
right?
A very good point, yeah. 4 podcasts left, man. We got lots of work to do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, have Brandon come on, you know, right before training camp. Say, okay, your time's up. Get on the podcast.
Yeah, I will do that. That'll go over great. I'm sure he'll be happy to participate in that. Though I might hit him up for that, actually. He's, you know, he's always good to work with, and, you know, maybe he'll grace us with his presence one of these days. Who knows?
Hey, we can call it the Brandon Roy cast.
Yeah, no, we will. Yeah, we'll brand it Brandon Roy MuscleMilk.com podcast. Whatever kind of promotions he wants to throw into it, you know, I'm willing to lay out for that. So I think that's going to do it for us. For my good friend Dave Deckard, BlazersEdge.com. For myself, Casey Holdall, TrailBlazers.com. We will do it again next week. Good to be back, and hope to hear from you guys soon. Take care.